Hey, it's Scott Petrick with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. Browns lost in Denver on Sunday to snap a three-game winning streak. They headed straight to Los Angeles to prepare to face the Rams this Sunday and once again have uncertainty at quarterback. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, WKYC Morning News. How's it going, Chud?
Scott, it's cold. There's snow. I'm jealous you're out there in California living the life. I mean, oh my gosh, you sound so far away.
Yeah, I am out here in LA. It's early, Chud. I get up early to this podcast. I actually just woke up because I'm still on Cleveland time, but it's nice out here. I've never been to LA before. So I've been here, I don't know, 20 hours, and it's nice.
Yeah, all joking aside, you're going to be working a ton. I know that, but are you going to be able to get any golf in or no?
No, I am not. And actually, I stayed in Denver a couple extra days because my uncle was out there, and I was hoping to play golf. We were going to play golf on Tuesday. That was the plan, but it snowed over the weekend, and it never melted, like, enough. Oh. It was 50 degrees, so, like, we could have played golf. I'm like, the weather's fine to play golf, but there's too much snow on the ground. So it doesn't I do not think I'm going to play any golf.
Yeah, well, you missed Cleveland's first snowstorm, so we got it good the other morning, especially the east side. So not a lot of golfing going on here either.
As they say in Office Space, I'm not sure I missed it, Chuck.
Yeah, right. That's true. That's true. Overall, though, you know, and we're going to break down the game. We're going to get back to the game. We designed this to do the pod later in the week with all the injuries and also previewing this game. So we'll get back to the game. But overall, you know, how's the trip going for you? I mean, it's cool that you're out there to give everyone the coverage that they deserve on this team as they, you know, have these two games out west.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, they practiced – so we're taping this Thursday morning, so they practiced for the first time Wednesday. And it's at UCLA, so it's cool. Like, it's right on campus. The field's not quite 100 yards long, but it's big. It's way wider. So you got the 2 feet, you know, kind of two separate fields. So I think there's plenty of room. But so that's cool. Like, Chip Kelly was there watching and a bunch of UCLA people. You know, so they're getting their work done. I think it, you know, you mentioned the weather, and I don't think that had any impact when Kevin Stefanski planned this trip and, you know, the offseason. But I think they're probably getting better work done than they would have at home. I know, you know, I wrote something last week about, or earlier this week, about this trip allows the team to be closer in bond, right? We talked about this so many times with the Greenbrier, and this is another opportunity to do that, especially, you know, in the, you know, heading into the stretch run. It's been a long season. They had the early bye week, so you have all that leading up to it. And I think, you know, they keep calling this a business trip because that's what it is, but it also allows, I think, the team to have a change of scenery that can be good for them. You know, a chance for, like, a bunch of guys went out Monday night, and, like, not just like, there, you know, like, the offensive line went out with the offensive line and quarterbacks, but then they met up with a bunch of guys from other position groups. And, you know, you just don't have that at home on a given Monday night, right? You're home with your wife and kids or whoever it is. So, you know, that should be good. I think the fact that they can get in a lot of good work in good weather helps. So all that's good, and I think that's legit, and all makes sense, right? But they still have to figure out who's playing quarterback and if they can score enough points to win these three games to get to the playoffs. You know, the three games that I think they need to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, and we'll get to this game in a moment. So they practiced yesterday. They're going to practice again today and then Friday. I mean, it's that typical Berea schedule just out there?
Yeah, the timing's a little off. It feels it's later in the day a little bit. You know, I think today they don't practice till almost 1 o'clock Pacific time. But yeah, it's the same. It's Wednesday's a normal practice, Thursday's normal practice, Friday's a little bit quicker. But yeah, they're on the same schedule.
Yeah. And the logo, the NBA logo was there to talk with them, right?
Yeah, how about that? That was pretty cool. And you know, we talked to a handful of guys yesterday, and they were all seemed to be really impressed by that. Jerry West, obviously, you know who Jerry West is, and I knew he was unbelievable, and knew he's all Hall of Famer. And then you started looking up his career. He played 14 years for the Lakers, was a 14-time All Star, was All NBA 12 times, scoring champ, won a title with the Lakers, was Finals MVP in a losing, you know, the Lakers lost, but he was so good, he was finals MVP, then goes on to be a coach for a couple of years, then a big time GM, and win. I think he won four titles with the Lakers as GM. So just unbelievable resume. And, you know, I think the guy is really, I think it really meant something to hear him talk to the guys.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. So everything we've talked about so far has kind of been the opening act. You know, you go to a concert, you have the opening act. So we've gotten through that. Now it's time to get to the all right, Bono's on the stage now. U2's on the stage. So here we go. Let's talk about the game coming up. And, you know, whenever I would put a sports cast together when I was in the sports department, and you had a difficult time deciding what to lead with. And they do this in the news as well. Sometimes you call it an umbrella lead, which means you kind of mention both things, but you got to start with one. I feel like that's where we're at right now with Myles Garrett and the quarterback situation. But I've mentioned both of them, so we know they're both important. But I think we start at the quarterback, and I think you have to bring up the fact that yesterday Joe Flacco, Stefanski mentioned that he is now the number two quarterback if DTR can't go.
Yeah, Chad, I never heard that term, the umbrella lead. That's interesting. I think given the situation, it's quarterback. We need to talk about quarterback first. And so Flacco jumped P.J. Walker on the depth chart, which makes sense, right? He's been here a week plus. You know, I think the Browns have seen enough of P.J. Walker. I think they thought that after the Seattle game. Nothing he did at the end of that Denver game on Sunday, even though there were tough circumstances for him, certainly. But he didn't do anything to change the minds. So it was natural progression. Joe Flacco moves up to the number two spot. What's interesting is with Dorian Thompson-Robinson still in the concussion protocol, at least he was on Wednesday. We don't have an update yet Thursday. That means Joe Flacco is in line to be the starter. So the question becomes, if DTR clears protocol at some point this week, who do they start? And, you know, I don't know if he meant it or he was just saying that because gamesmanship or because he didn't want to put it out there. But Kevin Stefanski said that that Joe Flacco is the number two, and that implies that if DTR is healthy, he starts. Now, that can change at some point this week, right? If DTR doesn't practice for 2 days, does he come back Friday? Like, let's say he can practice Friday. Is that enough time to start Sunday? And Stefanski wouldn't go there. You know, he said, we're going to let the week play out, let the concussion protocol play out. But I think that's a really interesting question. Some people would want to see Joe Flacco, period, and think he gives them a better chance, right? We've seen Thompson Robinson start three games now, and he's gotten better each start. And I thought he gave him a chance against Denver before he got hurt, but it wasn't great. You know, there's limitations. So I think that's a tough decision for Stefanski and this team is, who do you start? If both guys are healthy, both guys are cleared, who do you start? And if you start Flacco, then can you ever go back to DTR, right? Like, if you go to DTR and then he struggles, then you can go to Flacco, right? I think that's an easier switch. So it's a tricky situation, and they've been dealing with this now, the quarterback uncertainty since the end of September, right? And it doesn't feel like it's cleared up. And I just actually a column, an analysis posted earlier this morning that I wrote, and like, I don't know if it's ever going to clear up, right? Like, you know, we don't know how good Joe Flacco is. We know who Joe Flacco was, but he hasn't played more than a year almost a year, right? The last time he played was at the end of last season. He hasn't, he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass since he beat the Browns in week two last year. He wasn't on a roster for training camp for the first, 11 weeks, right? So, you know, I think there's this image of Joe Flacco, and I get it. And I would probably lean toward Joe Flacco. But there's no guarantee there, right? Does he stay healthy? He's 38 years old, like all those things. So Kevin Stefanski, again, is in a really tough spot. So, you know, I think I would go with Flacco, especially because DTR missed practice yesterday. And I think you want to go, I think you want one plan. And the plan Wednesday was Joe Flacco is the number one. I don't think you change that, right? And then if he plays Sunday and you get an idea of how good he is or how bad he is, right? So that's what I would do. I would just move ahead with Joe Flacco. You don't have to call it long-term, but you say he's our guy for Sunday. You know, DTR opened the week in protocol. I don't know if that's what Stefanski's going to do. What do you think?
Well, I might take the opposite side and say, yeah, I do want to see Flacco, and I'm curious. But you made a great point, Scott. You said it yourself that it's easier to go to Flacco after DTR than to go Flacco and then back to DTR. And I think that now if this concussion thing goes all the way till Saturday and, you know, it's iffy. But, you know, if he can get out there and practice, you know, when's the earliest you think he can get out and practice before I finish my answer?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, we're taping this before practice on Thursday. I don't think it's impossible today because, and I say that because most times, a lot of times when guys are in the concussion protocol, they're not on the field, right? You just don't see them. Like Marquise Goodwin, the receiver, for 3 weeks, he wasn't on the field. Well, DTR was on the field yesterday. And when I say on the field, he was at the edges of the field. Right. Like you could see him in the kind of working out or in the weight room, like hanging out. And there were a bunch of UCLA people. And then he kind of wandered out to the edge of the field and threw a couple really short passes to Goodwin. And that means, you know, like he's not having light sensitivity. Right. Because he's out and he's moving around. So, you know, I think that means there's a chance that the next step of the protocol is you can practice. Right. You're not out of the protocol, but you can practice. So, you know, I would say for sure that he practiced today, but I wouldn't rule it out given the fact that I saw him with my own eyes yesterday.
Yeah. So I'm a little nervous about how he's going to, you know, come off of the concussion, sure. But if he's cleared and they feel that he can play, I mean, they said he was their starter when Watson was out. And if he's your guy, most times in the NFL, when your starter comes back, you go with him. So I think that you ride out your guy. And I'm not going to fault DTR for the Denver game because, like I said last week on the podcast, that was his first game starting on the road. So I wasn't surprised that it didn't look great, but yet he still had them in the game. So yeah. I wouldn't fault him for that. Now, do I think in the end Flacco's the better answer? He might be, but I don't know. I say I go with the guy that you said is your starter unless the injury completely takes him out, and you go from there. And then you still have Flacco as an option if DTR just continues. I don't want to say continues, but if there isn't the upside there, if you feel like you need that guy to come off that veteran presence like Flacco. I mean, when they said they were going to go get another quarterback, they said they just needed another guy for the room. They never said they were bringing in a guy to be the guy.
No, those are all really good points, Chud. And, you know, part of me does say, you know, they went on this two-game West Coast trip, and why not just have those be DTRs? And then if you lose and you're 7-5, you come back home, maybe you make the change then, right, if you feel it's necessary. So, I get that point. I think you're 100% right about they just said they're bringing in Flacco to be the third guy. I mean, you can make the argument that if they thought Flacco was better than DTR, they would have brought him in 6 months ago, right? Like, I mean, he's been out there the whole time. And your original point about they said he's a starter, so if he's healthy, play, I think there is an argument to be made there that's how Kevin Stefanski feels. And, you know, as far as I know, he's the guy making that final decision. So that's not, you know, you could be 100% right, Judd. And it's maybe it's too quick for me. Maybe and I'm not saying DTR is bad. I just, having seen what I've seen of Flacco in the past, I kind of think he gives them a better chance to win, right? Like, that's how I feel right now, having watched DTR for three games, you know, less than three games.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I could be wrong about that. And I haven't seen Joe Flacco play. All I've seen is stand there and throw passes, and he looks great, but he always looked great doing that, right? Like that's who Joe Flacco is. I mean, he stands there at 6'6" and throws the ball. So it's interesting. And I think something else to your point is the offense would have to change some, right? Almost, you know, it's probably similar to last year when it was Jacoby Brissett. The offense was different than when it was Deshaun Watson. And Watson can run it, DTR can run it, P.J. Walker can run it, and Flacco can't. But, like, that's not who he is. So they would have to change. I mean, they're changing the playbook, but the play calls would be different, right? Like, it would be, I think, at least to some degree, a significant change. And you know, is that something you want to do, right? If you don't, if, you know, if you don't have to, maybe you don't do that. And maybe you just stick with DTR. So I think all those things are really interesting. And I would not be surprised if he could practice today, if Kevin Stefanski, if he practices today and tomorrow and clears the protocol, I would not be surprised if Stefanski just stuck with DTR. But it's just interesting because Flacco is such a big presence, right? The Super Bowl MVP, the almost 200 starts. And, you know, like, I guess my last thought on this is, if you're talking about how can the Browns make a run, right, which is get to the playoffs and then maybe win games in the playoffs, like that scenario seems more likely to me with, like, Joe Flacco rediscovering his glory days than with DTR. And I could be wrong about that, but that's how I feel.
Well, I would probably agree with that. And okay. At the end of the day, I probably think I think probably you're going to see Flacco at some point, somehow, some way.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I'm just guessing on how maybe that way might be. And again, sure. I do want to point out, if there's any question about the injury and the concussion, I would go Flacco for sure. Yeah. One thing I will say about what you said before, though, is they may have said they brought him in as a third quarterback, but there's no way they didn't think that he would eventually be their guy backing up DTR at least, and then maybe eventually being the guy.
Oh, correct. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Hey, so you had mentioned, you know, he always looks good throwing the ball and everything, but you're our set of eyes out there. How did he look in practice? I mean, you know, it's been a while for him. I'm sure he's been working out on his own and everything, but just to be back on the field with the team in the pads.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked good. You know, there's people going, why don't you have video? They were on the opposite side of the field, so it's the quarterback. So it's really tough to get video of him throwing. Hopefully we get a better view today. He just looks good to me, Chud. And I thought he looked good last week throwing it, you know, when he first arrived. He's my kind of quarterback, you know. He's a big, tall guy that stands in the pocket and flings it. And if I were a GM, that's the kind of quarterback I would get. And I get today's NFL has changed. I do think it's valuable to have that escapability because the pass rushers are so good. You know, you need it, unless you're Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and maybe Drew Brees, you know, is probably in the same category. It helps to have those off-schedule plays, right? They make a big difference. If you make four off-schedule plays a game, that can, you know, that's the difference, can be the difference in the game plenty of times. And Flacco doesn't do that, right? Not that he can't move at all, but, you know, there's no, you know, you're not calling a quarterback sweep with him, you know, like you do with DTR or with Deshaun Watson. So, but having said that, like, he still moves, like, you know, he's 38, but he, you know, he looks good, looks in good shape, and the ball comes out of his hand great. And, you know, that doesn't mean the timing will be there with the receivers. And, you know, that's a serious topic and something to keep an eye on. But I'll tell you this, Chud, and I think we talked about it after that Steelers game. You can see the defenses squeezing the Browns offense when DTR is a quarterback, right? Because he hasn't thrown the ball down the field. Right. And part of that's, you know, you got protection concerns, but I think part of it is it's not a strength of his game. And I think with Joe Flacco back there, that spreads everybody out. I think it makes the defense play deeper. It makes them play wider. And I think that helps your run game. Cause, you know, the run game was pretty good in Denver, and we could talk about the fact that they didn't run it enough, but Denver loaded up just like Pittsburgh did. They have extra big bodies in there to take away the run game because they want to make DTR beat him. And he hadn't beaten him. And I don't think you can do that with Joe Flacco because I still think he's a really – I think he has the deep threat, and he still does. And if you send Amari Cooper deep six times, the defense has to go because Joe Flacco can hit him.
All right, I've changed my mind. Flacco to the rescue. Let's go. Get him in there.
Love it.
It's funny because over Thanksgiving, I was talking to some family members about just that. Yeah, you know, there's no concern about the deep ball, and it's all intermediate short passes. So you make a good point there for sure. It's hard to believe, man. What have you ever guessed? If Flacco does start, he'd be the fourth starting QB this season for the Browns. That's amazing.
I think the last time that happened, 2008. The last time the Browns had to start four quarterbacks in a year. Right?
You know what's sad? It's not
that common.
No. You know what's sad? I was just looking at the schedule this morning, and we'll get to this later, but I was, you know, you're trying to get to those 10 wins.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about, you know, 2024 and the possibility of maybe hosting a playoff game. Man, can you believe it's been since the 94 season, January 1st, 1995, since this city has seen a home playoff game?
Yeah, right? That's crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You know, yeah. That's, yeah. And just, I mean, I have to tell you how that town would be, right? It'd be insane.
Oh, my gosh. It would be bonkers. But, well, we'll talk about that when the day comes. All right. So I think we can move on from the quarterback. Let's get to Myles Garrett. He worked on the side yesterday. Is that right? And did he have no sling on his left shoulder? Is that correct, Scott?
Correct. Yeah. No sling. Was kind of with the guys that don't practice, you know, I don't know if everybody knows how that works. You know, I say it like it's common knowledge. You know, if guys aren't practicing, they either stay inside in rehab or they're on the sideline and riding the bikes or doing, you know, that ski pull down machine, right? They're working with trainers on the sideline and then they watch practice. You know, usually they get done with individual drills and then they go watch the team drills, right? And they can see what's going on. That means they're closer to returning, generally speaking. So Garrett was with the rest of the guys that didn't practice. Denzel Ward, Kareem Hunt were some of the guys. And the fact is, Myles Garrett doesn't practice on Wednesdays. Like, it's a rest day. Now, he has a shoulder injury he's dealing with, so it's not just a rest day. But, you know, I have no doubt that he's going to play. So, number one, guy played, you know, the guy's committed to playing it through anything, and he said that for the last couple of years now. We saw it coming off that car wreck last year, right? He missed the one game. I think he wanted to play, but, you know, the decision was don't play. You know, it was less than a week after the wreck. And then, but he played the rest of the season, despite shoulder and biceps injuries. So as long as he didn't have the MRI and then, you know, the doctor say, hey, it's broken or you're dealing with XYZ where we really need to shut you down, I was convinced that he would try to play. And then when Stefanski said that, you know, he said there wasn't any structural damage, you know, whether or not he's just saying that, whatever, it meant that they expect Myles Garrett to play. And not practicing yesterday doesn't change that at all. Now the question becomes, how effective can he be? Now, yeah. Right? And when you open that thing with the umbrella lead, you're right. We should have started talking about quarterbacks. But after that game Sunday in Denver, I thought Garrett was the most important story because he's their best player. And if they were without him, to me, that's more important than which one of these guys is playing quarterback. You know, now it's different if it's Deshaun Watson, but when it's your backups, you know, I think Garrett is probably more important. So having him out there is going to be huge. And then the next question is, can he play like Myles Garrett and can he affect the game? Because we've seen how good he has been this year. I mean, we've seen it throughout his career, but especially this year. And we've seen how good he is, how he affects games, how defenses have to give him so much attention. Does any of that change given the shoulder? And, you know, we're not going to know that until Sunday.
Well, the thing is, too, is after the game and you see that happening, Browns fans, I mean, you know, you're just sitting there and you're like, what more do we have to take? I mean, Chubb and Watson and all these injuries. And then now your best player, and you can argue whether Chubb or Watson or Garrett, whatever. I mean, those are always the three that are at the top of the list, right? But, I mean, you're just like, what more are we going to have to take here? I mean, are we really going to have to now battle without Garrett? So definitely that was a huge concern. So major relief, because here's the thing. You're right. How effective he will be, but just having him out there is a huge deal.
Oh, you're 100% right. I mean, because they're not, unless teams see on film that he doesn't have it, right? That he's not the same guy, that he can't. I mean, the speed's not going to be affected, right? The quickness isn't going to be affected. It's, can he rip off with that shoulder, right? Can he detach from the offensive lineman? Unless/until they see that he can't do that as effectively as he always does, then they're going to double team him and triple team him, right? That's the way it is. That's how Denver operated. And he didn't, you know, when we talked to him after the game, he didn't remember exactly which play. He said he felt the pop. But there's a play early in the game, and you go back and watch it, and I watched it live, and then I saw him go straight to the sideline. And I thought maybe he's just tired, right? Because he, you know, he'd been out there for a bunch of plays. But he comes off the edge, goes through a tight end, disengages, goes to left tackle, disengages. Wilson scrambles and chases him for like 25 yards, right? Like, I mean, that's who he is, and he's fighting two blocks, and he's trying to get away from these blocks, and he's using that shoulder. So we'll have to see, you know, how effectively, if he can still do that, if the shoulder limits him. And then if it does he go to the other side of the line of scrimmage? Because maybe if he's going over the right tackle, then he's disengaging with the right shoulder as opposed to the left shoulder. So that would be something that I would keep an eye on. And if he stays on the left, if he stays on the right end against the left tackle, I think that's probably a sign that the shoulder's pretty good. If he moves around, then I think he's trying to figure out a way that that doesn't slow him down.
Yeah. Any more on Garrett before we move on?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Amari Cooper, Denzel Ward, those are two other big names and key injuries that we got to, you know, look at. How are we looking with those two guys?
Yeah, I think Cooper's going to be fine. I consider him in the same boat, same category as Garrett, that if he can play, he's going to play. And he proved that last year when he played those last, I think it was five games with the core muscle injury that required offseason surgery. And I've talked to Amari plenty of times about this, and he just feels like he needs to be out there. And not only, you know, I mean, it's to help the team, right? It's, he's the best guy. He should be out there. But I thought it was interesting. We weren't even talking about injuries, I don't think. And it was a training camp, you know, we're just having a nice long conversation. And he said something about, like, that Washington game. If you remember that Washington game last year, he was still hurt, and he winds up catching three touchdown passes or two touchdown passes. And he said, that's why you play. That's why you play, because you never know when that's going to happen, right? You never know if it just happens. And you see, he goes, I was hurt because I wasn't running full speed, but it just worked where I caught two touchdowns. And he's like, that doesn't happen if you're not playing, right? And I don't take that as a selfish thing. I just think that's a reality. Like, if you're out there, good things can still happen, even if you're not 100%. And I think he fully believes that. And, you know, unless there's no way he could play, he's going to play. And the x-rays are negative on those ribs. There's a nasty hit to the ribs. Like, he was in pain, right? He went down in a hurry and left the game. But the x-rays are negative. You know, he usually doesn't practice on Wednesdays either. So I expect to see him out there, you know, later today practicing. So I'm sure they'll pad him up, and I'm sure it won't be comfortable, but I don't have any doubt that he's going to play. Oh, and Denzel Ward. Yeah, he's still interesting. They missed him last week, right? In Denver, you saw Cortland Sutton run away from Greg Newsome a couple of times. They miss him. He's played at such a high level. He was out there. He didn't practice yesterday, but again, one of those guys working on the side. I think today's a big day for him. You know, if he gets out there Thursday and Friday, then I think he would play. If he doesn't, you know, maybe they hope, you know, that he can be a game time decision, but he's still up in the air. You know, it's not a long-term thing. Like, there's no IR, but does he have to miss a second game? That's still a question mark.
And now Watson was there watching practice. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, he had the big sling on the right arm, had surgery out here in LA last week. So that worked out well. I mean, obviously it's just coincidence, but
yeah,
that he had surgery out here. The team comes out here because he, you know, started his rehab out here. So he was able to be around the team. Everybody thinks that's good. I saw, you know, he's talking to Jimmy Haslam. He's watching practice. So yeah, I didn't get to talk to him, but certainly saw him with that big sling on. Yeah, so he's around. It's just another, you know, another sign of all the issues they've had at quarterback, right? Is watching your $230 million guy stand there in a sling in LA.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Speaking of, oh my gosh, let's get to the game now. We're not going to spend as much time on it as we normally do. I think you kind of just got. I said on the air on Monday morning, you just got to throw this one away. I mean, you know, you learn things from it, but it's one of those games. I'm not going to let it affect me mentally. And I hope that, you know, I don't think this is going to be a game that you know, turns any corner for them, or that, you know, it's a loss. It's a tough one. It was ugly. It's what I was afraid of. It was even worse, though, than I thought they'd lose by two. I didn't think they'd get hammered like this. They play from behind once again, and just really an ugly loss.
Yeah, and to me, the takeaways, the major takeaways, right? I mean, you have the DTR concussion, you have the Myles Garrett injury. But besides that, it was just too, Kevin Stefanski said it, it wasn't clean enough, right? They fumbled five times and lost three of those. It's really tough to win in this league when you do that. And the fact that the Browns are 7-4 and they've given it away either the most in the league or right up there is, it's really crazy. It's almost like a miracle that they're able to win games with as many giveaways as they've had. And we saw that again. You can't, it's hard to beat any team when you do that. You know, you have three lost fumbles. It's really hard to do that on the road. It's really hard to do that against a team that, you know, now has won five in a row. So that's number one. And it was big turnovers, right? I mean, they're, you know, the 4th-and-1 fumble at midfield from Harrison Bryant. I mean, that's, you know, that's a big play. It's a really big play in the game. And so you get the turnovers. And then the defense. And it reminded me of, you know, that Seattle game. Actually, it reminded me a lot of that Baltimore game, week 4, the loss at home when DTR started on that short notice. Because they give up those 2 80-yard touchdown drives in the first quarter to dig their Browns are second in the league in giveaways with 23. So they give up those 2 long touchdown drives to dig the 14-0 hole. And then you're fighting, you know, then it's uphill. And they almost got back, right? If Amari Cooper catches that 2-point conversion like he should have, it's 14-14 in the third quarter. And that, again, that shows the resilience the Browns have. It would, you know, they're right in it, and then, you know, leaves a field goal for Denver, and then DTR gets hit and, you know, knocked out, and then it all goes down from there. But you just, you know, if you're the number one defense in the league, like, I get that people move the ball on you sometimes, and Sean Payton, the coach for the Broncos, had a great game plan, and Russell Wilson, you know, was really good at the line of scrimmage, calling, checking into run plays, and he's really good keeping the ball on run plays. But, you know, like, maybe he's expecting too much, but giving up 2 80-yard drives in the first quarter isn't good enough, right? And it's tough to do that, especially with the limited offense the Browns have, right? I guess that's the bottom line. The defense needs to be better than that because the offense isn't good enough. And the defense wasn't good enough giving up those 2 long drives. Now, they made adjustments, and they got a couple of stops, and then it's, you know, 14-14 and 17-14. And then after that, it was turnovers, right? They had the huge fumble on that reverse, turned into a short field touchdown, and, you know, I don't know if I blame the Browns defense that much for that. You know, that kind of to me, a questionable call on that touchdown for the Broncos. You know, I wasn't sure the guy had the ball, had possession before he was out of bounds, and that turned in as a 4-point play. So my point is the defense just needs to be great. And it wasn't great, and that makes it really hard for this team to win.
And how many times have we talked about it on this podcast? I mean, it's right. I mean, we've hit this topic many times, and you brought up the Baltimore game. They got lucky. Well, not, I'm not going to say they got lucky, but they won the Indianapolis game, but they didn't play well there.
Right.
And you mentioned Seattle, so we've definitely seen games where the defense. You're right. It's like, you're right. They have to be elite and just completely be great in order for this team to win, I think. So yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah, just real quick, the numbers are staggering between home and road for the defense. And for a while, I thought the sample size wasn't big enough. But now there's something there. And like, it's not even close, the number of points and yards they've given up at home versus on the road, which should – it shouldn't matter because it's like crowd noise isn't a factor when the defense is on the field. But it's weird because their worst games by far have come, you know, except that second quarter against Baltimore. At home, they've come on the road. You know, you mentioned Indianapolis, Seattle. You know, they gave up 30 points in Baltimore, right? And then against Denver. So I don't know if there's a rhyme or reason to that, but I think it's gotten to the point where it's at least worth noting.
Yeah, it's almost like when you break down this team, you know, obviously the quarterback play can keep them from winning a game. The defense can propel them to victory. And then really they're kind of a different team on the road than they are at home.
Yeah. It's weird, you know.
So you bring up the defense. We've talked about all the other things in this game, but the one thing that I have to hit, because you know who got clobbered the next morning.
Yeah, I do.
Kevin Stefanski, right? When they lose, then he takes a beating, and it's especially because, you know, fans didn't feel like they ran the ball enough, especially early on against a team they felt they should have run on, and you know, his choice for play calling.
Yeah, all right. That's exactly right, Chud. And okay, so there's two big points we have to hit. Is they came out and threw it a bunch. Yeah, I think at halftime it was 20 throws versus 14 runs. And some of that was 2-minute drive at the end of the half. So, you know, it's a little slanted, but it was at the best or worst, depends how you look at it. Let's call it 50-50. And you know, the Broncos had the league's worst run defense. Minnesota kind of gashed them the week before on the ground. So it felt like a game where you could come out and try to run it a bunch. Having said that, and I'm going to play, you know, defend Kevin Stefanski, or at least play devil's advocate. You got a rookie quarterback, you're trying to get into a rhythm, right? So you get it from throws early. You know, the philosophy has always been throw first and then turn it over to the run. And then the main reason, I believe, that they threw it as much as they did early was the Browns go three receivers, right? And that's supposed to spread out the defense and create space. And then you can run against a lighter personnel, right? It's usually a cornerback, a third corner, as opposed to a third linebacker. Well, Joe Bitonio said after the Pittsburgh game and after the Denver game, the teams aren't, the defenses don't do that, that they stay big personnel. And so they make it hard to run against. And if you have that extra linebacker and he's matched up against a receiver, it makes sense to try to throw over the ball against that defense in that coverage. And I think that's why Stefanski did that and why they kept doing that. Now, were there plays where maybe DTR should have gone to a run? And I don't know if he has that ability. I think he does. He could check it to run if it's a light box. And I think there were opportunities to do that, and they didn't. And I don't know if that's a Stefanski thing or a DTR thing. But I think there are reasons. I know there are reasons for why Stefanski threw it as much as he did. Now you can also argue, hey, this is a great running team and run it anyway, right? Even if the situation isn't perfect, you're better off running it. You got a rookie quarterback. And I understand that argument, and I can't really even fight you. What I would fight you on is it should have been 14-14 in the third quarter, right? Like, so the play calling was good enough to get you there. And, you know, they settled for two field goals in the first half inside the red zone. And one of those DTR fumbles when he's supposed to pitch to Kareem Hunt. Right? And that kind of sabotages the drive and the chance for a touchdown. So it's not like they didn't move the ball, right? They moved the ball. And then Delda wanted a play call to start the fourth quarter, the reverse that went haywire. And here's my thoughts, right? Obviously, it's a disaster. Elijah Moore pitches to Pierre Strong Jr., doesn't catch it, blah, 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 blah. Broncos recovered the 20, score a touchdown, right? Game changes dramatically there, right? I think they're down 17-12. I keep saying 17-14, but Amari Cooper dropped a two-point conversion. So they're down 17-12. They're right in it. They're near midfield. Disaster. And then they're not going to recover, right? P.J. Walker, quarterback, the pressure's getting there. They're not going to recover. So it's a huge play in the game. Having said that, you know, people, oh, why are you trying to get all fancy? Well, one of the reasons you try to get all fancy is because you have P.J. Walker, quarterback, and you don't trust him to go win the game by himself. So how do you supplement that? You get a little creative. Maybe you get a huge explosive play on the reverse, and all of a sudden you're in the red zone, right? Like, you're looking for explosive plays, and if you don't trust your quarterback to get them for you, you got to manufacture them. So that's one reason I don't necessarily blame Stefanski for the call. I mean, obviously it backfires, so, and he's a play caller, so I understand that. But also, you got to, like, sometimes you got to blame the player. Like, Pierre Strong dropped the pitch. Like, catch the ball. Now,
yeah,
I don't know,
really?
Right? I mean, 93 is coming through the middle, and I don't know if he blows it up or not. But if Strong gets around 93, it looks like it might be a play there. And Strong's like one of their fastest guys. That's why he's in the game for that play. So I get that it turned out terribly, but I think the reasoning behind it makes sense. And at some point, you do have to blame some players for screwing stuff up.
You know, it's funny. How many times do we talk about this with Stefanski, right? When they lose, he's just the easy target to blame. But really, I mean, you know, how quickly people forget after their wins, you know, there's no blame heading his way at all for right. the most part. So, you know, that goes. And what did we talk? What did we say a couple weeks ago? You know, isn't it amazing how a few weeks ago, remember I told you I heard a radio show playing the schedule game and they just couldn't figure out how they'd lose another game, you know? Right. And then now, you know, after they lose to Denver and they look the way they did, everyone's wondering, oh my gosh, can they win enough games to get in the playoffs? But I just think you need to look at the body of work of this entire season. And I still feel really confident, Scott, that they're going to get to those 10 or 11 wins and they're going to make the playoffs. I do.
Wow, that's a strong statement, Chad. This is why you're a professional. That was a heck of a segue because that's where we have to go next, right? We have to talk about can they get to the playoffs? And I mentioned that analysis and it posted within the last couple of hours. And I started it, and I thought about you when I was writing it on the plane from Denver to LA. I started with saying how futile it is to play the schedule game, right? Because, and I think my point is this season just proves that. Because, right, you thought Deshaun Watson would play. So you're picking games when you thought he would play. You didn't know they'd be on quarterback number four, right, if Joe Flacco starts, right? Like, you just don't know any of that. Not only do you not know it in May, we didn't know it 3 weeks ago, right? So all those predictions you're making in May, as fun as it is, right? Oh, like, yeah. It's foolish, right? And we know. I mean, we say that when we do the schedule game anyway. But because this league changes so fast, and one key injury – doesn't have to, but it can change the season, let alone five key injuries, right? So, and I say that because in order to talk about the playoffs, you got to play a little bit of the schedule game, right? Like, are there three winnable games left? And that's to get to 10. I think 10 gets them in the playoffs. And I would say, yes, there are three winnable games. And, you know, like the Rams game's winnable. You know, I think the Browns are 4.5-point dogs. At least that's what it was the last time I looked. So that's not like they're, you know, that's winnable. If they play well, can they win? Yes. The defense plays great. Can they win? Yes. Jacksonville at home. I mean, Jacksonville's good. I think the Browns will be underdogs. But could they beat Jacksonville? Yeah, of course you could beat Jacksonville. Chicago at home. I think the Browns will be favored. So if they're favored, that looks like a, you know, could be a win. They get at Houston. Houston's playing well, so I don't think the Browns will be favored there. Now, this is assuming that DTR or Flacco doesn't start lighting it up, right, and things change. But then you come home for the Jets, who I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to be playing because the Jets will be out of the playoffs. So could you beat the Jets with whoever's playing quarterback not named Aaron Rodgers? Yes. And then you go to Cincinnati for the finale, and Joe Burrow's not playing, right? So, like, there's six more chances, and you got to go 3-3. And there's three games that feel like the Browns will be favored or – a pick them, and you know, you probably have to win all three of those, or you have to win all three of those unless you pull a surprise versus LA, versus the Jaguars, or versus Houston. So that's how I see it. Now, I say they're going to be favored, that doesn't mean they're going to be favored by a bunch, and it still means you have to play well. Like, that's the bottom line. They're not good enough offensively to overcome poor play, and Denver was a prime example of that. Right, they had a chance to win that game. They just weren't good enough, and they made too many mistakes. And you have to just play better, and it's harder to do. Right, the margin of error is way smaller than it was when Deshaun Watson was playing well. You know, wasn't a lot, but the couple of games, three games he played well, that margin of error got bigger. It's small now, but I do agree with you. I think the chance is there, and if I were going to bet, I would bet the Browns get to 10 and get in the playoffs. But I have way more doubts. Even after Denver, because of, you know, the more uncertainty quarterback and how in the Myles Garrett injury and how the defense didn't play as well as it needed to.
Yeah, but I go back to that, though. I mean, you've seen the defense do this before. I mean, it shouldn't completely shock you. And in that environment, and you even said it, it was 14-14 and they had a chance until it just imploded. So my thing is that both of us said they'd win 10 games. I'm sticking to that. And a couple weeks ago, I amended that to say they could possibly win 11. I'm sticking with the 10 with the possible 11. And you just named off all the reasons, and the teams are playing. Now, if their schedule was different, listen, if they still They don't have to play the Ravens again. They don't have to play the Steelers again. They've got, and they only have one more game in the division, and right, and it's against a team that doesn't have Joe Burrow. So the fact that you're staying out of your division, you have teams on the schedule that are dealing with injuries. Now, believe me, that Jacksonville game, that Houston game, those two worry me. There's no doubt about it. But you know, other than those two, I think you can make an argument that listen, they could win any of these games left on their schedule, but they could certainly lose them all as well. I think you just kind of said that. So I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I guess I don't think there's a crystal ball to know exactly how it will work out, but I just feel that the defense, it just depends which unit shows up week to week, and I feel confident that the better defense will show up enough to get them through this hurdle. And here's the bottom line, just like you said, you know, trying to play the scheduled game in May, we have no idea how they will look with Joe Flacco if he does ever get to start for them.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where my, you know, I guess most of my uncertainty would come from. But you make a good point, Chad, and I do think there's maybe a little bit of that prisoner of the moment with regarding that loss in Denver, right? Like, you know, I'm there, I'm in the locker room, I see Myles Garrett in a sling, like, it felt bad, right? When you walk out of that locker room, it's like, man, what, you know, like, what's gonna happen moving forward? Now, things come down, Myles Garrett plays, you know, even, I mean, maybe DTR comes back, and it's not, there's no upheaval, right? But it just felt, and again, that could be too much prisoner of the moment, and, you know, you have the right big picture view, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to go back doing a favor for my brother-in-law, who I know listens, and he's a fan of the podcast. And he was asking me over Thanksgiving that we kind of brought it up, and I'm putting you on the spot here if you'll even remember. But going back to the Steelers game, and he was questioning how they got to where they finally got on that last drive for the field goal. Do you remember that? How they ended up having to spike the ball? And, you know, Can you kind of run through that? Like, do you think they messed that up or almost did? Or do you, you know?
Yeah. No, that's interesting, because I did. I asked Stefanski about that specifically. And because they called it, they ran, you know, they got in field goal position. And then they run. I'm just making sure I'm thinking of the right game. Yeah. So they get in field position, right? That's the Washington,
so
right?
I just pulled it up here. They had first and 10 at the 26. Kareem Hunt rushed for 2 yards. Right.
Yeah, DTR goes 4 for 4. Yeah. So they run it, right? Kareem runs it. And what I expected them to do was let the play clock run down, call, because they had one timeout left, call timeout and kick it, right? What they did was they called timeout with, whatever, 25 seconds, something like that, run again, hurry to the line, and spike it. And Stefanski said the reason for that was every yard's critical in that situation. He thought the 2 or 3 yards that Hunt wind up picking up, and it could have been more, right? You never know, he gets 8 yards, is important when you're trying to kick the winning field goal. And he said there's plenty of time to do what they did. And they practice that every week. And he goes, if it was 16 seconds or fewer, he probably wouldn't have tried it. It's hard to do. With the amount of time they had, he said it was no issue pulling it off. Now, you got to be composed there, because if your guy spikes it and everybody's set, you get a 10-second runoff, you could lose the game, right? So there is risk involved. But the reason he did it, he said he thinks every yard's critical. And Dustin Hopkins, the kicker, said he appreciates that thing.
All right, so there we go. Cleared it up. Appreciate that.
Thanks for listening, brother-in-law.
That's right. Yeah, that's it's good to have the listeners out there, Scott.
Yeah,
can't do it without them, right?
That's true. It's just me and you talking then.
Yeah, that's true, no question. All right, let's get to this week's opponent. You know, the Rams, they're just a weird team, because I know heading into the year a lot of people didn't have expectations. Matt Stafford, you know, comes out and, you know, they come out strong at the beginning of the year. I know they had a few losses at the beginning, but they were against good teams and they were close. But overall, they're 5-6. I know he was injured. You know, they when they're on, man, their passing game, they can light it up. But now they have the Kyren Williams at running back that's just kind of come out of nowhere. This is definitely an offense that can be concerning if they're on fire.
No, there's no doubt. And, you know, I haven't seen a ton of them this year, but I watched most of that game last week until it got out of hand against Arizona. And, I mean, Kyren Williams is legit. And he's got nine touchdowns in seven games. Matt Stafford's back from the thumb injury. And, you know, he's not perfect. And he gives you interception opportunities. But he also can throw it, right? We talk about Flacco. Like, to me, they're similar styles. Like, they throw it great. And Stafford always has. Stafford's a little younger and more mobile than I think they're actually drafted back-to-back years. I'm going to look that up. But he's got a little more mobility, I would say, than Flacco does. But, yeah, he can stand in the pocket, throw it. They got Kyren Williams. He's got two receivers, right? Cooper Kupp and then the rookie. Well, how do you say his name, Chug? You're a fantasy guy.
Puka Nacua.
Thank you. Right? So you got Nacua, who's, you know, lit it up early and continues to be productive. Cooper Kupp, we all know who, you know, what type of receiver he is. And then you got two guys running the ball. You got Williams and then, man, forgetting the other guy. So, like, they're good on offense. And then on defense, they have Aaron Donald, right? So, like, you know, they're only 5-6, but they feel like they could beat anybody, right? That's, yeah, Stafford is a 2009 draft class. Flacco's 2008. But he's 3 years younger. So it feels like, yeah, they're scary. I think they're playing better than they did earlier in the season. Stafford's playing better. He seems healthy coming off that thumb injury. So, yeah, they're worried. Sean McVay is a good play caller. And we saw, you know, I mentioned what Sean Payton was able to do, at least early, against the Browns defense last week. And that kind of reminds me of what the Rams might be able to do, right? They run that play action. They do the, you know, the misdirection. Like, they're tough, and he can scheme some stuff open. And as good as Browns defense is, right, you give up plays in this league. And not only do you give up plays, but, like, you can scheme it, right? I mean, that was Kevin Stefanski does the same thing on when the Browns have the ball. Like, you can scheme certain plays. Now, maybe it doesn't last all game, and the defense figures stuff out, and Jim Schwartz is good at making those adjustments. But if you scheme enough, right, and the Browns offense can't match those plays, then it's hard. And I think McVay has those capabilities. I mean, we've seen him win a Super Bowl, right? Boy genius. Like, he's really good at that. So I think this is a tough matchup, especially given all the issues that the Browns are having that we've talked about.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't know if you mentioned Atwell. They have another receiver, yeah. Atwell, that's good. And you got to watch out for Higbee as well. He's kind of been a letdown, but he had two touchdowns last week. I think the other running back you were talking about, so the running back last week that got other carries was Freeman. But, man, they shuffle through running backs, and I think the guy you might be referring to is either hurt or
– No, it was Freeman, because that was the game I watched. He was pretty good, like, between the tackles. They had a good 1-2 punch going last week.
So that's who you were talking about. Okay, Royce Freeman.
Royce Freeman. Yeah, I knew it was a guy. Like, I kept thinking Deontay Freeman, and I know that wasn't him. So that's what I was struggling to figure out, yeah.
But they shuffle through running backs. Right. I mean, they had Cam Akers at one point. It's just it depends. But, yeah, it seems like Williams is the real deal right now, no doubt. So, it's going to be it definitely will be, you know, this is one that could certainly – I think we talked about it last week. I think we both talked about how both of these games, you know, you could see them going either way.
Yeah.
Rams defense, I mean, does the defense concern you?
No, I mean, Aaron Donald, right? He's always a concern. I was watching him, and it looks like – who knows? Maybe he can move around enough. He's flexible enough. But against – the Cardinals last week, he spent a lot of time over left guard, which is Joe Batonio. So, you know, you feel good about that if you're the Browns. I mean, it's Aaron Donald, so he's going to win some. But, you know, if he stays there, that's a good matchup, right? Like, the Browns have a chance in that matchup. And even if Wyatt Teller, you know, if he gets Teller or Posick, like, you know, it's not like a super mismatch. But, you know, he's good, and I think you want your best on him, and that would be Batonio. But then on some pass rushing downs, Chubb, like third down, he would move over and go after the right tackle. Now, I wouldn't expect him to do that against Juwan Jones. I don't think he would like that matchup, Aaron Donald, just because of Jones' size. But could he go over left tackle and Jaron Christian's over there? And, you know, I mean, he's been okay in replacement of Jared Wills Jr., but not great. And I think you need to help him, right? You leave Jones alone and you help Christian. So if Donald goes there, can he exploit that mismatch and get to whoever's quarterback? And that's what would worry me about that Rams defense.
Yeah. All right, you ready to get to prediction time?
Yeah.
You know, this might be part of your problem that you're dealing with mentally here when you look back at the game, is that you picked them to win and they let you down.
Right. Could be.
I mean,
that could be wrong, Chad.
I know. I don't either. And that's what I'm saying. When that stuff happens, it affects us mentally. So I think that's kind of like just the way you view it. Because I know when I pick them to win and they let you down, you have a different feeling, I feel like. So I think there's something to be said there. But
you're playing a little amateur psychologist there.
Hey, I give you your props when you win. I got to have a little fun with you when you lose, right?
So. Yeah, no, but I think you're probably right about that.
Anyway, Petrak 7-4 are matching the Browns' record at 7-4, and I bump up to 8-3. Although I'm going to be honest, I picked them to lose 19-17. I didn't see it going that poorly. I mean, the second half was ridiculously brutal, so I didn't see that coming. But needless to say, it's time to move on. And I'll go first. You went first last week, I think.
Okay.
So I'll go first. And I said last week, and I felt this way before these two games when I looked at it weeks earlier, and I felt the same way last week. And I kind of felt like they were going to go 1-1 on this West Coast trip. And I'm going to stick with that. And I'm picking the Browns to win. Scott, this is just the team they are this year. I think they bounce back. I feel like the defense is going to come to play. I think the Rams are just one of those tricky teams that could go either way, and I'm going to go with the Browns defense stepping up and carrying the way, and it's impossible to predict what the offense will do as we're taping this on Thursday because you don't know who's going to be the quarterback. But I feel that regardless of who is that quarterback, I think they're going to find a way to pull it out just enough. The Rams are right now, I saw 3.5. I've seen some different numbers there throughout the week. They're 5-6 overall. 39.5 is your over under. If they win, they go to 8-4. And that means they only have to win 2 out of the last 5 to get to 10 wins. And that's kind of what I'm banking on. Take a little pressure off. Browns get the win 20-17.
Well, I like all your points, Judd. I think you're having a good podcast, Judd.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, I do. Like, I think you're making a bunch of good points. And I could certainly see it playing out that way. And I'll tell you what, if they win, Baltimore's got to buy this week. If they get to 8-4, they're only a game back in the North, right? And I've kind of, dismissed the win in the North. But if you're only a game back, then that's still in play too, right? Having said that, and again, I could see it playing out exactly like you said. I really could. And I hate to be, we've talked about it before, like I hate to be read too much into one game. Having said that, I'm going to read too much into this game, into that Broncos game. And like everything we've talked about, like you can usually tell where I'm going with my predictions, right? I don't hide it very well.
No.
I just think there's too much that I don't know about this team. I think I don't love the matchup from a defensive perspective. Yes, the Browns have a good defense, and yes, they could shut down the Rams. I'm not convinced they will. I don't know if Denzel Ward's going to play, and they missed him last week against those receivers. So having said all that, and let me preface it with, even if they lose and they're 7-5, none of those things we talked about the playoffs change. It just adds adversity, right? They dealt with adversity all year. It's just another, okay, this is what they have to overcome, a two-game losing streak. I don't think they've lost 2 games in a row this year, right? So, so you have all those, like, another thing to build up, it comes home, and you know, then it's Jacksonville, right? Like, so anyway, I'm going to go. So the season isn't over if they lose, right? If they go 0-2 on this road trip, the season's not over by any stretch, but I'm going to pick the Rams 23-17. I did not know what the over-under is, but that puts me right half a point above the over-under. I'm just not feeling great about it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you make a lot of good points. I it's tough to argue. I agree 100%. If they do lose, I agree with you. It's do not panic. It's not the end of the world. I will I I will say I'm a little nervous about the Jacksonville game. Spoiler alert. But we'll see. I mean, a lot changes before we get to that. But yeah, wow. Okay. So you're going 0-2 on the West Coast.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have said that last week. I would have thought, I don't know if they lose in Denver, they go to LA, but it just feels different now. Maybe this trip changes it, right? Like maybe the week in LA, they find something and something clicks and they get that intangibles, right? They get that momentum. Maybe, and like that could happen. I can completely think that that could happen. I guess what I'm seeing on offense, I'm uncomfortable picking them to win this game.
All right. I hope you're wrong. Yeah. So does everyone else. Right, just like right. When I pick them to lose, I hope I'm wrong.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's tough. And again, right, you don't know. They could win easily. You could be 100% right. But I haven't picked them to lose in a while, so there we go. Right? I mean, it's been a while to pick them to lose. So. Yeah. So, all right, that's where we're going. Chud, anything else we need to touch on here?
I think we've gone for
– Yeah, it's a big juicy
We've one. Gone pretty long here. I think this was a beefy pod.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
So, perfect. Well, thank you as always, Chud. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll do this next week. I'll be back home and see if we're talking about a win or a loss. So, thanks, Chud. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com.